It's the 10th anniversary of Ebor Academy Trust, and in this special edition of Ebor Talk, we speak with Rachel Totten about how Ebor was set up initially to rescue a very troubled Haxby Road school. At the school itself, voted Primary School of the Year, we chat with Richard Ludlow, founding CEO, about the start of a journey that has so far seen 23 schools join the Trust. And we hear from current Chief Executive Gail Brown about how the pandemic changed everything, and an innovative school-led system is now championing Ebor's school improvement. What made you think that Haxby Road, where you were a governor, needed help which would possibly take it down the academy path?
Right. Well, it's quite a dramatic story, really, because from my point of view, I joined the governing body, and within a couple of months, so I joined in July, and by September the head had been suspended. During that time we had an absolutely fantastic interim head, Jane Golightly, who did a very forensic look and basically identified that we would go into special measures. That was very concerning, and we had to start thinking very, very seriously about what was going to happen to Haxby Road, because we knew that that would lead to an academy order and the potentially to us being forced to become part of a MAT that we might not have any sort of strong feelings about. So what we decided to do was get on the front foot rather than the back foot about that, and before the inspection came, we decided to start specifying what we were looking for in an academy trust and trying to find potential suitable candidates. And when we did a trawl through all the MATs that were operating in the area, and remember this was very early days, we had real difficulty identifying anywhere that seemed to be in tune with what we were looking for our school.
Am I right in saying that in York at that time there were no multi-academy?
To the best of my knowledge, that would be right, yes. I mean, you know, we were looking at it as a local authority school, and with all of us, I think, very strong loyalties to local authorities. We were all sort of at that stage of thinking, oh, you know, academies, you know, they're something quite different, and, you know, being in the local authority is what really matters.
But indeed, to be fair, York had an excellent reputation at that time.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
And quite rightly, it could sort of not necessarily be keen to join in, because why upset something that was working so well?
However, to give them their due, they did encourage us to get on the front foot and to start looking before something was imposed on us. So it was very much with their blessing that we were beginning that hunt. So we drew up a job description for a multi-academy trust. In the end, we interviewed one multi-academy trust, which I won't name, which we didn't think was a good fit. We felt they were very much driven by business, not by the children. They didn't appear to be terribly interested in the children, even though they'd had a look round the school. They talked about the buildings and the estate, and, you know, they weren't really that interested, it seemed to us, in what was going on in the classrooms and how the children were thriving. Nor could they help us with securing a head. They said no, that wasn't really what they were about. And to us, that seemed a pretty fundamental part of the whole process.
What on earth were you going to do next?
Well, that's a very good question. And then, out of the blue, really, it felt to us, I'm sure there was more to it behind the scenes, but Richard Ludlow rang Anne Gladwin, who was the chair of governors, and said, would you be interested in becoming a sponsored academy? If we converted to becoming an academy, he said, and you converted to becoming an academy, and we sponsored you, would you be interested in that? So obviously that was a very, very interesting proposition. We didn't know anything about Richard. We didn't know anything about Robert Wilkinson. But he arranged for us to visit and have a very, you know, very thorough look at what the school was like and how the children were learning and how they were thriving and what the culture and the atmosphere of the school was, and to ask us any question, you know, for us to ask him any questions that we wanted to. And he was very transparent, very frank about, you know, all sorts of things. And it was very clear that this was somebody that we could work with. It was like the best possible solution.
Yes. So again, so having gone from a situation of almost despair, thinking, well, what could we mm-hmm. do now, to have had this this sort of introduction to how things could be,
yep.
must have been very tantalising.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was still very much about unknowns. You yes. know, we still didn't have a clue what it would feel like, what all the processes would be to get us to that stage. And, you know, it was a leap of faith, really. But we had no choice. A leader who seemed to be completely in sympathy with the way that we wanted to see the school developing. Mm. That was absolutely wonderful. I mean, it was a cause of great celebration. We then had to meet the governing body of Robert Wilkinson as well as the governing body ourselves.
Yes. And so how did that go? Because obviously they would have had to be in the position of yep. of agreeing or indeed not agreeing with their head teacher was yep. suggesting.
Well, I think they were very interested in the proposal that Richard put to them. That was the impression that I got. They certainly wanted to explore it. They could see, and I think one of the sort of, if you like, selling points was that there would be new opportunities for staff at Robert Wilkinson and for Richard himself, but it would be an opportunity to continue to develop, but also to do something good for other children in York. You know, because one of the things that Richard said quite often was he couldn't bear to see children in a situation where they weren't thriving and where they weren't getting the best possible deal.
Yeah.
So that governing body had had a very, very different sort of experience from Haxby Road, obviously. Many of them very long serving in a very successful school where they were not used to having to grapple with sort of big school improvement issues at all, because what was happening was the school was constantly self-improving. So it was that first meeting was really like two different worlds coming together and trying to understand each other. I think, you know, sort of on the one hand, people wanting to talk about buildings and, you know, finance and things like that. But really, it all came down to school improvement, children thriving, the culture of the school, and really strong leadership for the school, because that's the only way you get children thriving and a really strong culture in the school.
Sure. So from going from a... I'm interested to know how long this procedure would have taken then. So from going from realising, thanks to an excellent interim head,
mm-hmm.
that the school was actually in quite
yeah.
a state,
yeah.
to having a situation where you've met with the governing body, agreed to pursue the conversations, keep exploring mm-hmm. the possibilities, mm-hmm. and then obviously, as we know, it sort of finally did happen.
Yeah.
So what kind of time period are we talking about?
Right, so I think the school actually went into special measures in 2011, and it might have been early 2012, in fact, probably early 2012. And we were starting to seek out our possible sponsor later in that year, sort of perhaps middle to, well, probably autumn term of that year.
Mm.
Probably by Christmas, I suspect, or early in the following term in 2013,
yeah.
we would have been having discussions with Robert Wilkinson.
Yeah.
And then the whole DfE process kicked in once we'd yes. agreed. And, of course, the DfE had to agree
yes.
to Robert Wilkinson converting and sponsoring us.
Yeah. Does anything stand out from those very early days? Are things that you possibly had imagined might have transpired, but in fact something unexpected happened? Any stories from that time?
You worry that the staff at Haxby Road would fight this, or, you know, it might become a sort of real issue.
Certainly suspicious, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, cautious and, you yeah. know. But it was... And I put this down partly to Jane Golightly's leadership, but also to Richard's increasing influence at that point. I think there was a willingness to go with the process because they understood, as far as I could see as a governor, people seemed to understand that this had to happen, there had to be change, things had to improve. Mm. They wanted, you know, they wanted clarity, they wanted stability. So by and large, there was a really good level of cooperation and a sort of growing commitment to doing things in a different way, because, of course, it involves a huge amount of change.
Yes. Hackney Road became the first school in the, in the new Ebor Academy Trust.
Yeah.
Because things started to happen really quite quickly in the early days, didn't they?
There was
The prospect of a brand new school at Stainer Hall came into view really quite quickly.
Yep.
The Filey Secondary School became an option as well. And Brotherton and Byron, of course,
was another school.
That was very, very early on.
Yeah.
So it must have been an exciting time to have all these options.
It was really exciting. And it was really exciting as governors to work with Richard on working out structures and processes for how things were going to be governed and how, you know, how that would work. Really, it was a very collaborative process. Now, Richard's somebody who has very strong ideas about all sorts of things, but is also, you know, open to listening to people and, you know, very much interested in taking other people with him and working out solutions with other people. So, yes, it involved an awful lot of meetings, I seem to remember, but they were mostly pretty creative and exciting. There was one point that I'll mention sort of before we'd actually converted, when Richard, Jane Golightly left because she was very keen not to work in an academy trust. She'd have been very clear from the beginning. I just remember going along to a meeting where they were trying to work out how to work with a group of very challenging young people, very unsettled children, with, you know, huge problems, very vulnerable children. And there weren't a huge number of them, but I think there were two or three all in one class that were causing lots of challenges to people. And Richard had in the room every single person who had anything to do with those children. So all of the teaching assistants, the teachers, you know, anybody who had significant contact with those children. So there must have been about 8-9 people in the room. And he literally asked everybody to help in the problem solving about what we were going to do. And that was absolutely typical of the way that he worked, but also the way that the trust started to grow.
So what were the early ambitions for the trust?
We had interesting debates about that because some trustees, or one trustee in particular that I can think of, was very keen that we should say we wanted to be the best trust in the area or something along those lines, you know, the highest performing trust in the area. And that led to quite a lot of discussion about actually what being the best trust meant. And we decided it didn't mean necessarily having the most outstanding data, that it was much bigger than that. It involved, you know, much more around personal development and well-being. Yes, excellence in classroom, excellence in teaching learning, excellence in outcomes for children. But, you know, it was a much bigger issue than that. And I think we're still, the sector as a whole is still working on what it actually looks like to be a really, really good trust. Yeah, what we'd been looking for was really excellent leadership, really excellent teaching and learning, really strong engagement of parents. And that was one of the things that made the biggest difference at Haxby Road.
A 10-year anniversary gives us a chance to look back.
Yeah.
Also to sort of, like, not necessarily rest on our laurels, but to sort of think, well, how far have we come? And obviously, looking at pure numbers of schools, we've done extremely well.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's sort of like the next step is, okay, we've looked in that direction. Let's sort of, like, try and do a little bit of crystal ball gazing.
Mm-hmm.
You are currently chair of the Trust. How would you sum up where the Trust is right now? And again, asking the impossible, really, but could you do a little bit of crystal ball
right,
and just see what might be around the corner?
So where we are now, I think, is where we would have been two or three years ago if there hadn't been a pandemic, because just as the pandemic happened, we were beginning to draw breath, reflect on a period of very rapid growth. We had a new CEO in Gail, and we were ready to start reflecting on all the structures that we had in place, all the ways we were doing things, and consolidate and, you know, really get things tight. pandemic came along, we had to focus on different things. But in a way, I mean, we had to work on remote learning very rapidly. And I think many of the strengths of the Trust came out in that. And the other thing that had to be worked out, how on earth do you do it in a pandemic, was safeguarding. And I think the Trust had a really strong response on safeguarding during the pandemic as well. But in the last 18 months, 2 years, I think the Trust has been able to do that consolidation. It's been able to reflect on where it is. It's been able to take stock. It's very difficult, isn't it, when you're in a governance role, because you can see the impact that governance has, but at the same time, you know it's not you that does things. So, you know, the influence, I think, is there, but it's not the transformative influence. But I do think that the board got much greater clarity about what its values and vision were and the kind of strategic plan that it wanted to have. And obviously, the CEO worked on the detail of the strategic plan with her very talented team. But, it was within a structure that the board was trying to outline and get clearer. We're at a good place now. And when you go through, you know, all the documents about what a strong trust looks like, I think, without being complacent about anything, I don't think there are any significantly weak areas that I would identify. And I think there are many very strong areas. I do continue to find this trust quite remarkable. I think the fact that it started on the basis of values and today it still operates on the basis of values is a wonderful thing. And I think a lot of trusts have caught up with that. So I think there are far more trusts out there now that are driven by values. But I think EBOR started there and it continues to work in that way. But I have never yet talked to anybody who is cynical about EBOR or doesn't feel a sense of commitment to what it's doing. And I think that's a fantastic achievement.
Richard, here we are back at Haxby Road Primary Academy, where it all started.
I know.
And I'm sure, is this the first time you've been back since you left?
The first time in this hallowed building.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, it's quite appropriate that you've come back to this.
It's great, actually, to see the school. And I was really pleased to hear about their recent achievement.
Yes.
Well, it would have been 2023 achievement.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was really heartening because it made you really feel that, yeah, it's gone full circle. They've really stepped up and carried on the great work that was started those years ago, and particularly with Laura,
because
she was recruited by myself in those early days and as part of the team, and so that was particularly nice.
That's right. But if we can rewind sort of just over 10 years ago, and talking to Rachel earlier, she was saying that they knew that the school had to academise and knew the school was in a bit of a sorry position. They went to see a multi-academy trust, were particularly disappointed with them.
Yeah.
And so they were sort of scratching their head a little bit as to what to do next. Well, all of a sudden, you made a telephone call and said you'd be interested. So what prompted you? How did you know, for a start off, and what prompted you to make that call?
Well, we were doing some school-to-school support, for a start. So we were developing a partnership with the school and sharing practice. So that was the initial moment. Also, to be honest, it was I was having dinner with a friend and the conversation came up. And I thought, yeah, that's not a bad idea. It was the catalyst, but the journey was, I would say, quite challenging. It was the period where people were trying to find their place in education, the Michael Gove period, where academisation had started. Some schools had academised, some schools had joined partnerships, and everyone was trying to find their place. I was really interested in that concept of people helping one another and working in collaboration with one another. Hence some of the school-to-school support work that we did at Haxby Road. And that was the catalyst, really. Yeah, it was challenging because the situation is you've got an outstanding school at that time and you're going to the governing body saying, why don't we? And
what was the reaction to that? Because I guess if I was on the governing body at the time, I'd be thinking, well, we've got a good school here. We're happy with the school.
Yes.
Why should we take on additional responsibilities?
I think we had some very open-minded governors at the time. And I think that helped extremely. But we also did some open events where we were trying to explain what it would mean for the school. And to be honest, at that time, we're all trying to discover what it means for us. I suppose I always felt, in terms of York, that if you had a school that was struggling, it was the responsibility of those within the area to support and help. Yeah, so that was the main catalyst. It happened by chance, really.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think that it was a great partnership. And also, I think that the fact that you were working with a school that was in special measures at the time and was undergoing some challenges or trying to find their place, it felt like a good partnership.
So at the very beginning then, did you have anything like a grand vision of what this partnership would lead to, what it might become, and all the number of schools that would come under the wing of Ebor Academy Trust? Was that clear from the start, or did it happen?
That evolved, I think. I think that evolved. I think once we'd started the partnership, I realised the power of practitioners working together and sharing expertise across settings, both ways. And that was a real light bulb moment, really, is that it wasn't about the status of the school determining who gave what. It was the quality of the people within the setting. So even though Haxby Road at the time was in special measures, they had a lot to offer with expertise. And that was a real light bulb moment for me to say, actually, it's about the people. And it was the people that created that sense of partnership. And we called it at the time, it was like an immersion process where we literally had a team of people that came into the school. I remember that we had four deputies, I think it was, at the time. Myself came over. So it was a very sort of immersive experience, a living experience, I think. Because once you can live something, you can understand what it needs. And that was an interesting learning experience as well.
Was there ever any point where during that experience you thought, I'm in over my head here, I can't do this?
No, I would say it was challenging. It was definitely challenging. And it was challenging not only for myself, but the team of the staff that came over at the time from Robert Wilkinson. It's a totally different experience because sometimes you didn't get the feedback or the cooperation that you naturally would have expected in another setting. So yeah, it was certainly that there were some challenging moments. But I think also it was an opportunity to think differently and look at some of the issues that were involved. I was very interested in this opportunities for the older children to extend the day and sort of almost learn things that would enable them to cooperate and get on with each other. And that was a really sort of innovative moment where in some settings that just happens naturally. But here it was an opportunity to do something different, doing clubs and activities where the children... It was just about getting on and liking each other, working together, and that was brilliant.
Was it at that point then that you thought, actually, this needn't be just Robert Wilkinson on Haxby Road, this could be extended further?
What I realised at the time is that in the primary school setting, you haven't got all the infrastructures that larger organisations such as secondary schools have. And in a way, that was a realisation to me that actually, in order to exist, you need to have all the other functions of an organisation, but you can't afford those without the opportunity to expand and to create greater partnerships. Also at that time, we needed to create some income drivers, and therefore we started the school-to-school support arm and started helping and working with other schools. And that was great. And that model actually started almost by accident as well. It was another phone call to help with a church school, hence the church connection.
So it sounds like one thing led to another and these various connections.
And I think that once you start talking through it, you start to think, how can we do this? The school-to-school support sort of arm developed through a conversation of, can you help a school in East Riding? And I think my comment was, well, I think the only way you could do it was put a team on a bus and go and stay down there for a little while. Only tongue-in-cheek I was saying that. But the response I had, well, oh, can you do that then? And I thought, well, yes, maybe we could. And going away and then thinking it through made you realise, actually, we could do something a little bit more creative in terms of, again, sharing practice and building partnerships between not just buildings and organisations, but people. Once you can get the people to create responsibility for each other, then you've got a great sharing opportunity and a great, it's not just about just going down there and doing a bit of classroom partnership work. It's about that long-term sharing of practice. So, yeah, I think what tended to happen in the organisation is that you would be fronted with an issue or a challenge, and you would think, well, how can we do this differently? So I think that's where creative thinking comes. And so that's my passion for creativity comes, is that, you know, you don't have to follow the same pathways. You can think differently and wider. And that the beauty of that is then you become a vibrant, growing organisation. And I think that helps. We always said we didn't want to create an organisation of clones. We wanted to create an organisation of people that would develop their own strengths within their own contexts and be able to share that beyond their context and environment.
Because in the early days, of course, this was very much on top of being head teacher at Robert Wilkinson, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's you've got to sort of, you look back in those early days, and hence it's about the team and about the people. I mean, you look at Robert Wilkinson, it wouldn't have happened without the strength of the teaching at that school at that time and the leadership. I mean, Chris Evans was great at that. He was there at the front working with the school, and I had the confidence that I could walk away and do other work beyond that setting. So yeah, teamwork was really important.
I mean, in terms of local context, York quite rightly had a very proud history of how good its education was. Was there not any kind of resistance from the LA about what you were trying to do?
It was a period of political change. So I think you've got to say that the local authority didn't embrace the idea. Certainly, I remember a little story about being called into the office, and the people at the time, who no longer work there, I thought naively I was being called in to say, oh, thank you for thinking differently and creating a solution. And it wasn't that type of meeting. It was completely the opposite. So yeah, there were resistance, and I think in a way, that's another learning curve in life.
Is it because, obviously, nationally, the idea of academisation was starting to gather some traction?
Yes.
York had taken the kind of view as, well, that doesn't really apply to us because we put it so good here anyway.
Yes.
And there were yourself yes. and a very small number of people who were really quite trailblazing in this respect, weren't you?
Yeah, that's right. It was... I can understand why. People sometimes don't embrace change if they think it's working okay. But I think we all know that actually if you can embrace change in a positive way, you can create great things. And I think that's... Yeah, the local authority took some time to warm to the idea of a local solution rather than an external solution. And that's all I was looking at, is how can we do this locally? Mm. I heard the conversation. I was part of the conversations. We were doing school-to-school support at the time in Haxby Road, where an external organisation who had very little primary experience were looking at Haxby Road becoming part of their academy. And it didn't feel the right solution when you had something on your doorstep which could be the right solution. So yeah, those early days were really interesting, really challenging, and a great learning curve. And I think that in a way it's great to see the Multi Academy Trust developing and settling into an organisation which can grow from strength to strength.
We went through a period of phenomenal growth really quite quickly.
Yes.
Why do you think that was?
I think people saw the values of the organisation and saw that it was truly about belonging to a family of schools rather than an external organisation. And I think that having those real strong values built within the organisation, people resonated with that. They wanted to belong to something which was about growing together rather than being done to. And I think that's really important to remember, that you know the organisation started on that footing of let's grow together. Let's recognise the strength that everyone brings, and therefore you become a cohesive organisation of different strengths that can be shared, which I think is why we had the growth that we did, that it resonated with people.
And so Ebor, as we all know, is York, Selby, Holland, the East Riding, and on the North Yorkshire coast. But we've never gone west. Why was that?
I think that the idea was to grow hubs of schools. It's the connectivity, I think, that there may be that might be a vision for the future. The initial sort of vision was to create hubs within the Northeast region which could self-sustain, but then also cross-fertilise ideas so that you could learn across the different economic areas.
So so looking back, and you've been retired, coming up to 4 years now?
Three
years, beg your pardon.
This is my fourth year.
Right, very
what's,
good.
What's today's day? I retired the end of January 2020.
And certainly having had a chance to reflect since you've been out of the white heat of Ebor, as it were. Would you have done anything differently if you had to do it all over again?
No, I don't think I would, actually. I think probably took on some challenges which were harder than others in terms of distance and location. However, yeah, no, I think that every move was time to learn something. What I do believe is that you have to change with the times. So I don't think the organisation that when we started 10 years ago, it has to evolve, it has to change, and the vision has to be created. And that's something that time will tell.
So I guess in a way, just to sum up, Just as I've asked you to sort of look back and think, would you change it? You quite coherently said that no, you wouldn't. But what do you think are some key lessons?
That people matter, and that everyone can contribute in a way that will be beneficial to a larger organisation, whatever role that you play. I'm not sure whether that's a lesson I picked up, but that's probably a lesson I picked up in my career, that actually everyone is important, and it's how you can communicate that to them so that they can feel part of that organisation. Whether you're the site manager, the caretaker, the cook, the cleaner, you know, everyone has a role to play for that organisation to be successful and happy. And I think that's the key for me, is the people within it are the important thing.
Is there anything that you'd like to say which we've not spoken about?
I think that in the journey, there are going to be great successes, and there are going to be some times that are low moments. And I think this always the thing that you have to think about is what worked well, and basically what you have, and appreciate what you have and what you've achieved. And I say that because my biggest thing that I was sad didn't happen was the Creative Arts School. Mm. That's the biggest thing that I felt it could have made a real big impact to the local authority and to the wider schools to have that Creative Arts Academy. And I was really passionate about that. And that was probably the lowest moment. Mm. But you have to then look at the highs. Mm. As I said right at the beginning, you know, to see Haxby Road do so well and continue to do so well is really heartening.
So, Gail, we have spoken with Richard, we have spoken with Rachel, and we have a good idea of how the Trust has come to be where it is today.
Yeah.
Over the course of 10 years, and focusing very much on the early helter-skelter days.
Or cliff edge ride, as we used to call it.
But as current CEO of EBOR, I think it's probably appropriate to balance that now with your views on what happens next.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point, and it's a good point to reflect on. And also in light of the 10 years, it's interesting in terms of being in this role now, having been part of the Trust for 10 years. So actually having been part of its growth in different roles, and then obviously having the overall responsibility. And one of the things I reflect heavily on is obviously the impact of the pandemic, because for me, I was only in role 5 weeks before we went into lockdown. And then, of course, the following 18 months were the following 18 months, which actually, when you look back on it, you think, how did that ever happen? And what did we do? And timescales seem blurred and things seem blurred. But actually, that was how the whole country, wasn't it? And the world really was living. And then, of course, you come out the other side and you're still part of the same organisation. But that organisation and its people obviously have fundamentally changed. And one of the things I reflect quite heavily on in terms of my position is my job is significantly different to what Richard's job was. And I think the CEO of a trust now is very different to those first 10 years or those first 6 years, as he was saying.
So why is that then?
I think the first 6 years, well, fundamentally right at the beginning, A, there was a lot more money. There was a lot more money thrown into MATS. And so actually that fitted an entrepreneur, a creative, somebody who could grow. And we did grow. And that was really exciting and really exciting times. We then go into the pandemic at 23 schools, all of whom would be, once inspection came up, would be inspected within 2 years. And so actually the needs of the trust then change. So irrespective of the pandemic, just the situation in terms of how the sector evolves and what's expected of the sector changes. So, you know, we had 2 years where we had no end of key stage assessments. So that obviously had been a massive driver to start with. And if you think about if we hadn't had the pandemic, how would things have, you know, the route is very different. But I think fundamentally, the pandemic changed huge amounts. It changed huge amounts of, in terms of mindset. It changed huge amounts in terms of schools that weren't part of trusts, that saw trusts really come together. And I think in terms of our connectedness, there was a never a better time actually than we had through the pandemic. And then you come out the other side back into what I suppose we refer to as, you know, world normal again, or, you know, what is normal but isn't normal. Life goes on, life starts again, and things change. And obviously, you know, with austerity and with the lack of funding, et cetera, things become tighter. So in some ways, the trust's development sort of in the first 6 years, they then have the pandemic, then coming out up to 10 years. You know, we've been through a time where I'd say it was sort of stability and consolidation. And we've come through the other side of that. We've had 24 inspections in 2 years. You know, we've seen great improvement in a lot of our schools. Well, in fact, all of our schools, but, you know, particularly in the most challenging schools. You know, some have progressed quicker than others, and that's bound to happen if you're a trust our size. So we come through that, and now I think we're at a sort of another exciting, I suppose, to quote what I said before, the cliff edge ride, because now we kind of, I feel like the trust is ready in a position to put its foot on the accelerator again. And we've always talked about locality hub models. Some of our hubs and localities are more developed and substantial and cost effective than others, simply because of the numbers of schools and the size in terms of numbers of pupils. And so in terms of putting our foot on the accelerator again, I think actually what we need to do now is we need to cement the hubs that have fewer schools to really get that cost effectiveness. And with no more money, you know, we're all asked to do more with less. But I still stand by our vision and, you know, certainly my philosophy as a leader, which is every child's entitled to a great education irrespective of postcode.
So we're talking about focusing on specific hubs then?
I think that to start with, I don't think we would ever, and we don't actually, we're approached by lots of schools, but we always consider each on its own merit. But I think where we see schools working together best and most effectively, which obviously then what you want to see impacting children's outcomes, not just cost, that's where you've got the hub model, and that's where I think it works best. And we've got some really good examples of schools that either are federated or that work closely together. We've got some smaller schools that share heads. We've got some schools that might be in challenging circumstances where we've got leaders that work across a number of schools. And that's evolved and progressed. And I feel excited about that.
For the people working within EBOR, and there's a lot of people working within EBOR now, what can they look forward to in the next 2 or 3 years?
We've got an exciting year ahead next year. Next year, our 24-25 academic year will be EBOR's Year of the People. And there'll be more on that to come. I won't give any spoilers. I think the most important thing for me is if we don't look after our people in our organisation, whether that be two-year-olds in our two-year-old provision or plus 70, of which we have, you know, some great people who work for our organisation and are very committed, of all ages, then we are nothing. Because actually, you know, we look after our children, we want to get the best for our children to improve their futures. But actually, if we don't look after the people who look after our children, then we have nothing and we don't fulfil our ambition. So I think people matter. And sometimes it's really hard, isn't it, on a day-to-day basis. And I don't forget those days in schools where you think, oh my goodness, you know, I'm glad to get home and get the kettle on and put my feet up. And oh, it's been a really tough day, or, you know, the wind's been strong and those little children have been wild. However, I think it is important, and I think that's why our new appointment of Director of People and Culture this September, allowing a whole year to really look at everything that matters to people, whether that be well-being, whether it be appraisal, whether it be professional development pathways, looking at the whole gamut really, and sort of then launching that. And like I say, I won't give any spoilers, but launching that in a way to really focus. I'm hoping that people will really see that everybody within the trust, and particularly the leadership, you know, the trustees and the exec, really appreciate everything that everybody does.
Let's have a quick look at continual improvements. We're always striving to be better.
Always.
In what we try and do. Is there any specific examples that you could pinpoint with Ebor?
Yeah, so I feel really excited this year that we have moved to a completely school-led school improvement system. I referred earlier to beginnings of our time where there was considerably more money slushing around, if you like, and we did have what we called the an ESIT team, which was an Ebor school improvement team, a little bit similar to kind of like the old local authority model, where you had specialists that were based in the centre and then they would go out and support schools where that was needed. Now, obviously, as you start to grow and evolve, and also we are a trust that we're very proud to have taken on some schools in considerable challenge and that have needed not so much continual improvement, but rapid and sort of urgent improvement, that was right for the time. As we've moved through that and we are, you know, more stable, our outcomes last year were the best that they've been, and that's also, you know, likely to happen again this year and improve on. It was really great to talk with our heads in terms of what next. And what the model that we've gone to is a completely school-led system. So we have schools that lead certain areas and certain subjects. So we have a leading school for reading. We have a leading school for phonics. We have somebody who is a current practitioner in year six leading the year six network. So these aren't people who are employed by the centre and then just go out and troubleshoot. These are people who are walking the walk every single day. And that's something, and I think in terms of my own experience and history, in terms of my professional development myself, I'm a firm believer in the best people to drive improvement are the people who are doing it best themselves day in, day out. And no sector moves as quickly as education and changes as fast as education. So I think that's been really exciting. And what's been fantastic about that is seeing actually, and to be fair, we haven't always picked the schools that we think are the best at it. It was a very collaborative process. Our Director of Education worked really closely with our head teachers. The head teachers nominated schools. They either put themselves forward or put others forward. We then had a really good collaborative discussion about where we felt it was right. Obviously, schools, particularly those who were anticipating inspection or you know, were in a window. And we had to choose schools that were right for the time. But what's been really exciting is seeing some of those members of our trust really flourish and grow through that. And I know they're not all heads. The heads obviously within the school, you know, hold the small amount of budget that they have. We have a model where we don't send people to other schools to go and have, you know, or we have people to come in. What we do is we go and visit those schools. So you're always going to see the practice. Now that might be practice that's developing, it might be practice that's enhanced, it might be amazing practice, which is fine. But you're always learning something, and that's something I'm really proud of and excited to see actually ultimately at the end of the year, just how fantastic the impact's been.
Is this a model that other MATs are following?
It's interesting. We've had a lot of interest and a lot of people have come to talk to us about it. I think it's a model that isn't necessarily replicated across a lot of trusts. And to be fair, a lot of the larger trusts, and particularly those that potentially have large secondary schools that can bolster their budgets, the primary budgets by the secondary, and we know that happens, and people talk about that regularly. I think it's something that is not just cost effective, it's also about using like I said before, the people on the ground innovatively and creatively. And also the other thing that I think has really we've really benefited is it's given people in their own schools a wider sense of responsibility and knowledge of what the trust and what the being part of a trust means. We talk about one school, many sites, and it's a strapline we kind of band around. But actually, this really sort of emulates what that means in practice. Because, and I can give you a really good example of how that was borne out. So I referred to the Year 6 network lead. I was in a school improvement meeting with all the lead schools and the lead practitioners, and the director of education was asking the Year 6 network lead around specific data. And this teacher, Year 6 teacher, was quoting in considerable detail the data of a school which actually they weren't part of, and it was another school in a trust. And that, for me, is so impressive, because it's not just about having the knowledge, it's about being bothered about the success of other children. We always talk about it's no good being a great or outstanding school if you're not bothered about the school down the road. Well, when you're part of a trust, actually, and you're talking about one school, many sites, and you're talking about collaboration, it's having that feeling of responsibility of the outcomes of the children in another school, maybe an hour's drive away, as much as your own. And I know on a day-to-day basis that's hard, but actually in those instances, and that's why I'm really proud. I think it is innovative. I think it is creative. And I think it's using your best people for their best purpose.
You've just been listening to Gail Brown, Chief Executive of Ebor Academy Trust, and before her, Richard Ludlow, Founding Chief Executive. At the start of this podcast was Rachel Totten, former Haxby Road Governor and now Chair of the Trust. To find out more about Ebor, go to www.ebor.academy. My name is Tim Moat, and thanks for listening.